broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain, BC. We are CJSF 90.1 FM, and we are diverse, independent, and yours.
Music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony. This episode is produced in partnership with West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
This is the Best of the West. Inspiring women with real stories, hosted by West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology. Hello, and welcome to Best of the West. I'm your host, Danielle, and today we have Angie Byron, who is a Senior Director of Product and Community Development at Acquia. Angie is also a Drupal Core Committer, recipient of the Google O'Reilly Open Source Award for Best Contributor, co-author of the O'Reilly book Using Drupal, and open source evangelist who lives and breathes Drupal, in case you couldn't tell. Her work includes core patch review, improving the user experience of Drupal, strategic initiative coordination, testing and quality assurance efforts, improving and fixing documentation, and general community cat herding. Welcome to the podcast, Angie.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't we start with you telling us a bit about what occupies your days?
Sure. So I actually have this really weird and amazing job where my job is kind of to be Robin Hood, where like my company has a bunch of big corporations and governments as clients, and then they pay me to help turn their code into open source magic for everybody else who uses Drupal. So for people who don't know what Drupal is a it's a content management system and also a content management framework that you use to build websites or mobile apps or whatever kinds of projects that you have in mind. I like it because it's very good for clients who don't know what they want. You know, they think they want a website, and then later they decide they want a shopping cart or something, and then you just turn on a couple checkboxes and you're good to go. So, so I like Drupal a lot for that, and that it lets me be flexible as a developer as well. So a typical day for me, I kind of act as both a, I have a bunch of weird hats that I wear. So I'm a core committer for Drupal, which means I review patches that the developers submit for review. I'm also a kind of a community manager sort of role. So I will, you know, fly around the world and work with the development teams to, you know, whatever they're stuck on, try and get them unblocked, find two people who are working on the same thing and connect them together, that kind of thing. And then there's also a product management component where I'm reviewing what other people in the space are doing and kind of areas that we need to focus on to make our existing products stronger, new features to add that could, you know, be better than, you know, what our competitors are doing maybe, and all those kinds of things, and keeping things on track. So it's a very multifaceted role.
Yeah, it sounds like it. For those who don't know, what is open source and what's the value of that?
Sure. So open source is a software development philosophy, although it's getting into other realms as well, like sciences and education and all kinds of things. But the idea is that software is written using source code. It's like a set of instructions, like a recipe for how the program works. And with open source, or you know, traditional software like say Microsoft Windows or something like that, the recipe's kept secret. You don't ever know how the, you know, OS or whatever you're running is made. With open source, the recipe is made free and available to anybody to, you know, either use verbatim or, you know, modify it to their, fit their needs or this kind of thing to learn from, to figure out new cool tricks of how to make your own, you know, iOS or whatever you're trying to make and that kind of stuff. So so it's a really great design philosophy because not only does it, you know, foster education and things like that within the developer sphere, but also it makes available really advanced, sophisticated programs to people who wouldn't necessarily have the means to afford those, other words, like educational institutions or nonprofits or this kind of thing. So that's why I'm really passionate about it.
And why you're Robin Hood, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. So it's a pretty special job that you do. How did you get there?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story. So when I was finishing up school, and I went to school for many years because I'm a U.S. citizen trying to immigrate into Canada. It takes a long time. You can only mm-hmm. either be, you know, a student or working or whatever. So I was in school. Yeah. And just finishing up the last year of the last program because I finally got my permanent residency. And then my instructor told me about this program called Google Summer of Code, which was a program to where Google pays you over the summer to work on an open source project. And I was like, well, that sounds awesome. Mm-hmm. And I had never used Drupal, but I had heard of Drupal because I'm one of those people that likes to like go around the internet, view source on every page that I encounter to see how it works under the hood, because I'm curious like that. And I had seen Drupal was the thing powering a website back then called Spread Firefox, which was like a... It was a really cool grassroots marketing site where anybody could upload like... posters that they made to promote the Firefox browser, or they could upload like events that they were doing at their university campuses or anything like that. And I thought, that is really cool. So it kind of stuck in mm-hmm. my mind. And Drupal was one of the projects. So I figured, okay, well, I'll apply, you know, what can happen. And it was interesting because before this moment, I always had this idea in my head that to contribute to open source, you had to be like an Einstein kind of person who like knew everything about everything.
Yes, that legendary genius.
Yes, you know, like, because, you know, like Linus Torvalds or whatever, like, you know, I was like all these people that I looked up to at the time, and they were like way smarter than me. They were like university, blah, 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 like this kind of stuff, computer science. And then I found out that once you get on the other side of the, you know, I'm too stupid for this barrier, it's like, oh, holy crap, everybody can do this and it's amazing, you know. So I got selected for Google Summer of Code. I dove in. I worked on the quiz module, which is a little plugin for Drupal that lets you do like, you know, for education, university mm-hmm. style quiz online things. And that module still exists today, although I don't think any of my code is still there anymore. But I'm pretty proud of that. But yeah, so that's kind of how I got started in Drupal. And then once I kind of discovered that I didn't have to just be like an open source fangirl, I could actually like contribute to it, I started to just like go crazy. And so I got involved in like the webmasters team and the documentation team and reviewing core patches and, you know, helping out with marketing and everything that I could possibly do. And so a couple of companies started to notice that, and then I got an offer from one that was amazing, and I worked with them for many years. Their name was Lullabot. I think it's kind of been focusing on training and education. Mm-hmm. And then from there, Acquia sprung up around 2007 as a startup founded by the actual project lead of Drupal. Mm-hmm. And so I pitched him the idea of a job that was like, hey, just let me do the work I'm doing in my not in 40 hour a week job that takes my other 40 hours a week, you know, where I'm doing community development and empowering others and this kind of stuff. And he offered it to me, and I said, okay. So that's how that went down.
Nothing like asking for what you want.
Yeah, yeah. And then it getting it. It worked out in this case anyway, yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, definitely a good take-home message to our listeners is, mm-hmm. you know, if you find something you're really passionate about, ask to do it. Ask to be paid to do it.
Yeah.
The worst thing is someone says no, and you keep doing it for free. But you could get a yes.
Yeah.
That's pretty
and
exciting.
Yeah, and I've been there for 6 years now, so it's working out pretty good.
That's awesome. Were there any like key events along the way, other than obviously that Google internship, that really got you into either computer science or this job specifically?
Well, like I had a VIC 20 when I was like 4, you know, and I used to like copy the programs out of the back of 321 Contact magazine. This is going to seriously date me, but anyway,
those are really old computers. Just so
very
you know.
Old computers. It was actually a keyboard you plugged into the television and then
wow.
used it from there. Yeah, it was
amazing,
old school. But yeah, and so the programs were written in BASIC, and so I would just copy and paste like, all right, when there wasn't copy and paste, I would copy down like verbatim like 100 lines of code to make like a box go from one corner to the other or something like that. But then I would modify it and say, oh, can I make the box blue and can I make it pink or whatever, and that was cool. And then from there I got super into video games and I wanted to become a video game programmer, and it turns out that's a lot of math. It was not super
physics
into that.
Engines,
I know. And so but through researching that I got into the internet, and that was amazing because it was like, oh my gosh, there's like you know, it's just like this tool that lets me talk to anyone in the world about any topic you can think of. And I thought that was amazing. So I dove in and learned everything I could about that. And that's how I got into web development and onto Drupal and stuff like that. There was one person in my life, his name was Lee. He was a friend of mine. And he taught me how to like rip computers apart and put them back together again. And a little bit about programming, although a lot of that I learned on my own. And yeah, it was really great to have a buddy to like, you know, go on the computer journey with and stuff like that. So yeah, it was amazing. And then I would make computers for my friends and family. And then when I was in school, because you may know as also a permanent resident, you can't work while you're in school unless you're working at the school that you're at. So I was teaching like A+ certification courses in the evenings. And I was, the best course I ever taught was teaching a bunch of senior citizens how to rip a computer apart and put it back together. Because they were
that
so
amazing.
Scared. They were so scared. Yeah. But then it was like, you show them and you're like, nope, you pair them up and you're like, you're going to do this. It's going to be fine. And then by the end of the night, their computer boots back up again. And they're like, oh, wow, it was so cool.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. As someone who has built my own desktop computers, I could tell you when it actually boots properly is like the most satisfying moment.
It really is.
Yeah. Wow, what a journey. That sounds just incredible. And like, you know, you were already doing some of that kind of Robin Hoodie, you know, giving back to people who weren't super tech savvy to begin with. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's always been a passion of mine. So
yeah. So since you've been working on the internet for so long and on Drupal for many years, how do you see this field, either Drupal or maybe the whole internet, changing in the future?
Yeah, that's been really interesting because we're kind of in the throes of that right now. Like, you know, I'm old enough that when I first developed websites, there was like two screen sizes you needed to worry about. It was like 800 by 600 and 640 by 480. And that was it. And as long as your design worked in both of those, you were good. And then there's this horrifying image on the internet of like all of the screen sizes of like all of the Android and iOS devices. And it's like insanity.
Yeah.
And so we're already kind of in the throes of this change where we're transitioning from, you know, and you're designing for exactly what your audience will see to like, I'm going to just suggest some things and hope that it lays out for the best. I mean, that's pretty much where we're at. So we're in the throes of this kind of device independent movement. There's also a lot of stuff going on with things like personalization. So it used to be that you just generate the same content, you know, you'd make your homepage, that's the same information everybody gets. Now there's a big drive to say, oh, Danielle, welcome back, you know, like here's what we have new in pink hair color or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. So there's
You've
been a lot of
my interest.
Yeah, exactly. So there's been a lot of movement to that and a lot of movement to integrate with like social networks, Facebook, you know, these kinds of things and make it a really seamless experience. So something that puts these open source platforms on kind of shaky ground is that we are slowly, what we're seeing is like a consolidation of the web on Facebook, Twitter, Apple, Google, and not much else. And Amazon, I guess. And so trying to keep fighting for a free internet that's powered by, you know, code that you can run all the way down and see how it's working has been one of the other challenges that has been coming up. So trying to create great open source alternatives to those kinds of tools that people can, so people have a choice of where they want their data and how they want that managed and stuff. So.
Yeah, that's such a huge topic these days. I mean, we had Dr. Kathy O'Neill at the Press and Stream Colloquium lecture not too long ago talking about the ethics of algorithms and their potential biases, and it was pretty eye-opening.
Yeah, and you know, all code can have biases, but when the code is proprietary and you don't even have the option of inspecting it, you know, like you would in open source, that makes it even far worse, especially when those are employed to wide effects, which they often are.
So, yes, yeah. Definitely.
That was a great talk.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. She was great. So Angie, do you want to share with us a really memorable moment that you've had along the way?
Sure. So one of the things that I'm very passionate about is getting other women involved in this field. And so through the Drupal community, we started running these meetings with, you know, at a DrupalCon or that kind of thing. All the women in Drupal would just like get together in a room. And, you know, the first one was like 7 people. And then I think at the max we had in San Francisco, like, I don't know, there was at least 80 people in that room. I mean, it was awesome. And now we do these social gatherings where there's 200 plus, you know, so it's awesome to see that trajectory that's been happening. But one of the coolest things that I saw or noticed was, you know, we'd sit around in a room and it was kind of like Women Developers Anonymous or whatever. We'd all go around and we'd talk about, you know, like what our backgrounds were and this kind of thing. And I remember this one where, you know, we were sitting around and we were all just talking about what we do and this kind of thing. And I was struck by two things. One is that in a room full of, I think there were 30 women at the time, two had a computer science degree or any kind of formal education in computers at all.
Nice.
Yeah. Everybody else was, well, I was the most technical person at my church, and so I had to learn this stuff. And another was, I have an anthropology degree, and I stamp papers at the courts. I'm an accountant, and my grandkids needed a portfolio website or whatever. It was just like, it was amazing to see the very diverse backgrounds that everybody comes from. So I was struck by that. And then I was also struck by how women do this thing where they're like, well, I'm not a developer. But, and then they go on to like describe like, but you know, I've taken these CSS classes and then combined and modified them so that it would do it. And I'm like, that's 90% of programming is like copying and pasting some crap from Stack Overflow and making it work, right?
It's just, exactly.
You know, so I kind of tried hard to combat that, you know, like call out imposter syndrome when I see it and say, hey, I'm also someone who has imposter syndrome, and, you know, like making it a safe place to talk about those kinds of things. And within my various career, like jobs in my career, I've tried very hard to like eliminate things like a CS degree requirement, because it's like you're eliminating like 90% of women applicants when you do that. I mean, that's probably overstating because Drupal's a little bit of a special fish, but like still though, I mean, it was amazing to see that breakdown. So that was very informative for me, because I, you know, I've always been interested in tech stuff. So this has always been a thing that I've done. And it was very interesting to see the myriad of ways that women come into the field and why they're passionate about it and this kind of thing. So, yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. Imposter syndrome comes up a lot on the podcast and a lot in what we do at West. And it is a hard thing to fight, but you do see it so much where women are like, well, I'm not this, I'm not that. Mm-hmm. I don't have a STEM degree, but maybe I own a STEM company. Sibel, I'm calling it on you.
Yep.
But like, you know, it happens a lot where people are just like, oh, well, I'm not the best. I'm not smart enough for those things. You know, I don't fit into that category.
It's kind of insidious, because the smarter you are, the more you realize you don't know. And so there you start getting more and more self-conscious. But versus if you're like kind of like a little bit as dumb as a post, you're like, I'm the best at everything, you know, because I don't take the time to introspect and like look at the things. So, it's sort of it's horrible, because it's self-reinforcing like negativity and. So I try to fight that where I can. We at DrupalCon for the last few years, we've had a great session called the Imposter Monologues, where David Huang organizes it, and he'll find people like the rock stars in the Drupal community. I'm using serious air quotes around rock stars for the recording. But he'll find people who are, you know, looked up to by others, and then we'll talk about the fact that like I never graduated high school, or like I had like all these hangups about this kind of thing, or you know, I'm just starting out school, but I just dove in and saw what I could do, or whatever. And it's awesome to see people really humanize themselves. And I love that about our community, because we try to eschew that rock star mentality. And we're like, hey, we're all just people and we're doing our best, you know? So
yeah, for sure. And I think creating that space where people are humanized helps raise everyone else up.
Absolutely.
Because then they're like, oh, that person, that rock star, I can take them off the pedestal now and I can see how they can be my peer.
Yeah.
And I can be a heavy air quotes rock star too.
That's right.
Well, jumping off of the concept of humanizing people and maybe showing our vulnerabilities, do you want to share with us a problem that you've had to overcome in the past?
Okay, so this will completely de-rockstar me for all time. Okay, so I'm at Lullabot. It's my first client gig, and I've been in the Drupal community at this point for a couple of years, you know. And I'm put on the data migration task, and I'm like, okay, I know data migration. So we write like this horrible Band-Aid script of MacGyver, you know, safety pins and bobby pins or whatever, and like, you know, run it and it does its thing, and then you never look at it again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote one of those, and it imported like 400,000 user records or something, and checked it out. Everything was hunky-dory. Good. Move on, you know. Then the next day, they're like, oh, we found another 25,000 records that we forgot to tell you about. And I'm like, are you serious? And so I'm up till like 4 a.m. trying to look at the scripts that I'd written at 4 a.m. the day before to like get them all working again, and managed to figure it out, got it going. Everything seemed fine. I went to sleep. Then the next morning, like by the next morning, I mean like 3 hours later on Sunday morning, my boss calls me and is like, you need to get online right now. I'm like, ah, so I get online. And it turns out that the new records that were just imported were sharing IDs with records that were imported the previous day. And so people were seeing each other's like profile data, and it was like, I know I'm not allowed to swear, but there were a few swear words. Anyway, the problem was really simple. There's a sequences table that counts up, and I just forgot to increment the sequences table to the maximum ID.
Right.
So I fixed the problem in about 5 seconds once I, you know, realized what it was. But then I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get fired. I'm going to get sued. I'm going to get whatever. So I was like terrified and crying and all this stuff. And then my boss calls me and is like, so, we got you a massage. And I was like, are you serious? So yeah, they got me a massage and they said, and we're going to put you on data imports from now on because you will never make that mistake again, which is true. So that was how that went.
Man.
Yeah. So that was, I don't know. I overcame it by, you know, problem solving, by learning a lot from that, you know, like about safety guards and testing and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, so everything worked out okay. But yeah, it was like, so I just want to point out that like, big famous rock star quote unquote people make really silly mistakes and we learn from them just like everybody else. So
yeah, it's really what you do when you mess up, right? It's
correct.
The learning, it's the incorporating new systems into your normal work to prevent that mistake again.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
So, coming off of a very stressful story, how do you achieve work-life balance?
That's a hilarious question. Don't very well. So I made inroads to that, though. So I used to, you know, like I said, I used to work a 40-hour week job and then do 40 hours a week volunteering and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And that was a bit unmanageable. So I readjusted my career so that the 40 hours a week I was spending volunteering could be my job. Mm-hmm. That helped a lot.
Yep.
I also had a daughter. That helped a lot, too, because now when I, you know, when the ding ding bell rings, I want to just like spend all the time I can with her, you know, and that's helped a lot as well. I went through some really tough personal crap a couple years ago, marriage fell apart, all that kind of stuff. So I've also taken to building, social connections outside of work. What a concept.
Who does that?
I know. So I started going to Meetup and just like finding the weirdest crap I could do on meetup.com to like fill an evening, you know? So I've done like a zombie murder mystery dinner. And
that
like,
sounds awesome.
I know. It was awesome. It was like live action Dungeons and Dragons improv comedy, like all kinds of weird.
I'm taking notes.
Yeah. It's like just, it was fun though, because like through that process over the past year or so, I've got like actually this great group of eclectic friends that have nothing in common with each other other than they're really good, funny, awesome people. And yeah. And so having that has helped me kind of have ties to where I'm living and, you know, have a community of people around. Because I have like friends all over the world, you know what I mean? Through Drupal, I know hundreds of people who are like, you can stay on my couch anytime you want. But you know what I mean? But having friends where I live is really important as well. So
yeah.
I think kind of those three things is like kind of reconnecting with family, reconnecting with friends outside of work. And then conversely, it's almost helped dramatically so that when I am working, I'm a lot more focused and I'm like getting my stuff done because I know that at 3 p.m. I'm going to stop and I'm going to go do this other thing. I should point out my company's in Boston, so we have a 3-hour difference, which is nice. Yeah.
start early, end early,
exactly.
Nice.
So yeah, I would say all of those things have helped with that. But I definitely don't have this cracked yet. You know, there's still times, and it's hard when you work on something that you're passionate about and that you love the people that you work with, you know, it is easy to take that on as like, you know, for a while there, that was my support system. It was my community. It was my friends. It was my blah, 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 everything, which is not good. So I think breaking that up a little bit has been helpful. But you know, it's still, I guess it's, I'm not too fussed about it because it's, well, the work-life balance thing isn't cracked yet because the work is rewarding in and of itself. Like it's really fulfilling and the people I work with are amazing, awesome people as well. It does fulfill some of the social aspects there as well. So that was a kind of a rambly answer to your question.
No, it was great. Yeah.
It was so basically, great. I don't know. If you have tips, let me know. But this is what I figured out so far.
Very nice. So, Angie, in the next 5 to 10 years, where do you see your career path taking you?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question. So in my time with Drupal, so I've been in Drupal for about, oh my God, like 15 years or something now. It's been a long time. So we've learned a lot because our community has grown exponentially. Like when I started, we were about 25,000. There's now over 2 million people involved in the community. We've had a lot of scaling and growth challenges associated with that. A lot of challenges that we've had to solve around increasing the diversity of our community.
Right.
A lot of challenges around international, you know, like European versus North American, you know, communication styles and rule setting and all kinds of stuff. So anyway, we have like this huge body of lessons learned the hard way.
Yeah.
And what I'd really like to do over the next course of the next path of my career is not only get that stuff written down and, you know, and sort of productized is the wrong word, but something like that where we can create and ideally working with other open source projects on this as well. But, you know, I go to like the Community Leadership Summit, which is a it's like an open source focused conference for like all the people who do community management in like, say, Linux or Adobe or like these other kinds of tech companies.
Yeah.
And it's always really interesting because you'll get like a new open source project chop off the block and then you'll talk to them about codes of conduct and be like, what's a code of conduct? And you're like, right. You know what I mean? And
you're have like, to kind luckily, of ours is open source.
Yes. So what I'd love to see is like a central repository of these kinds of documents that are kind of right sized to different community levels. Because if you're not a community of 2 million developers, you probably do not need the level of governance and rigor and stuff that we've incorporated, right? But you still do need some fundamental basics.
Right.
So I think it would be really interesting to collaborate on something like that with a bunch of other open source communities that are very driven to promote diversity and inclusion and stuff in their own communities and see about that. So essentially like I've gone a very far way with Drupal. I still love Drupal. Drupal's amazing. The Drupal community is awesome. But I'd like to branch out more to other open source communities because I think we've learned a lot. I think other communities have learned a lot. And I'd like to facilitate knowledge sharing in that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. That sounds like a great future project.
Yeah. And then in addition to that, on the commercial side, so there's a lot of companies that want to get involved in open source, but they have no idea how to do that. Or, you know, they do it and they do it really badly. Like, hey, volunteer, can you get me that thing faster so I can make money off your work? You know?
Yeah. Oh, boy.
So, yeah. And so I think another path could be consulting with various companies on how to do that kind of thing in an ethically sound way. You know what I mean? It's like, I know that you have these needs. Okay, well, here's how open source works. Let's talk about how you can take what you need and funnel your resources in this way that will be mutually beneficial to the open source project and your company.
Yeah.
I feel like we've learned a lot of lessons around that with the Drupal project. I've also talked to many people outside of the Drupal project, and I feel like there's a lot of just like missteps that a lot of companies make that are very avoidable. And so trying to get together some best practices, trying to branch out more and teach them about the proper way to integrate with open source. I think that's something I'm really passionate about as well.
Yeah. Lesson one, open source is not free labor.
That's right. That's a very good lesson. Yeah.
Good rule number one. I've got you started now. So thinking back, way, way back, what was it that inspired you to pursue a career in technology?
Well, when I discovered the internet and this amazing tool that could allow human beings to communicate without physical barriers, and there's still language barriers, but there were even tools being developed to address that. I just thought that was completely amazing. So I guess the thirst for knowledge to discover everything about how that worked was what drove me into STEM. And I didn't initially pursue formal education. Like, I did a lot of self-teaching on how networks work and how to make a website and this kind of stuff. But so I think the thirst to just learn everything about what there was to know about that. So, you know, I would teach myself networking, how to make web pages, you know, this kind of thing. I made the most ugliest GeoCities web pages you can imagine in the course of this.
Oh, the way back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was in this like internet chat room where it was like for a punk rock record label thing where I met a lot of my friends I still have 20 years later. But they had like horrible security. So I used to like teach myself HTML because they didn't block any tags. So I would like practice in the chat room and stuff like that.
Nice.
So yeah, I got really interested in technology as a whole, just from the way that it connects people together or can do that. For open source specifically, it was really the ethos that drove me there. So this idea of knowledge sharing, this idea of everybody contributing the little bit that they know to make something greater than themselves. The idea of sharing that for free